to Yom Kippur. Find in this week's parasha, in the very first pasuk, we find two expressions. We find the expression ha'azinu, and we find the expression lishmoya. If you look in English translations, I believe that the English translations translate ha'azinu to mean to listen, and lishmoya to mean to hear. I never quite understood what the difference is between listening and hearing. According to the Mefarshim, there is a difference between the word ha'azinu, la'azin, and the word lishmoya. So the Mefarshim say, b'negeya to the pasuk in connection with Yisrael, that after Yisrael heard about, Vayishma Yisrael, Yisrael heard about all the events that happened to Klal Yisrael, it brought him, or inspired him, to be Megaya, to convert and to become Jewish. And the Mephoshim say that Vayishma doesn't mean to physically hear, but Vayishma means the way in which the New Yorkers use the expression to hear. I hear you. Vayishma means to understand, to appreciate, to really get to the bottom of something. Whereas Hazina means to physically listen. And that's part of the problem. Very often we physically listen, but we don't hear in the New York sense. We don't appreciate what we're listening to. We talk about a lot about Lashon Hara, be Makabala, little Kabbalah, do this, do that. It's all very nice. But at the end of the day, do we really appreciate what Yom Kippur is all about? I'll tell you a story. It's a well-known story in Jewish folklore. There was a Jew in the 19th century, a well-known Jew by the name of Pinchas Lichtig. It was known as Pinny Lichtig. Lichtig is actually a Yiddish word. Lichtig means light in Yiddish. Why was this guy called Pinny Lichtig? There's a story behind it. He lived in a small village in white Russia, right, the border of Ukraine and Russia. And he was your typical village Jew. To come to cheder in the village, he knew how to daven, he knew how to say Tehillim, but that was basically the maximum. That was the amount of knowledge that he had. But he was a frum Jew, he was an Elocha Jew. Went to daven three times a day, sat after davening and said his Tehillim. The Rav used to give a Dafi Yemishir. He used to go to the Dafi Yemishir every day. In fact, they said about Pinny Lichtig that his claim to fame was that he slept through the Shas three times. In other words, the Rav taught Daf Yomi three cycles, 21 years. Pinny Lichtig slept through 21 years of Shas. They even said about him that on one occasion, he managed to stop the Rav in the middle of a sentence. Normally, the people who stop the Rav in the middle of the sentence are the people who ask the good kashas. He stopped the Rav in the middle of the sentence because he was snoring so loud that the Rav said, either wake him up or I'm leaving because I can't continue with the shir. He got married. He was about 18, 19. He married a girl from the village. He had a problem. What do you do to make a living? Now, there are some people that even though they haven't got a formal education, but they're very talented, they're very bright, even without formal educations. You don't have to go through school and through college to be very bright. You can, in the country, usually if you don't go through school and through college, they don't ruin your mind. And you have natural capabilities. And he was naturally very bright. Probably had he been around today, and had he been Zoicha, quote unquote, to a proper education, he would have been a successful scientist or a successful inventor, because he was very good at creating things. He was first of all very good with his hands, and also he had a natural flair, he had a very natural talent to be able to be machadish, to be able to make new things. So basically, if he would have been around today, he would have been an entrepreneur, he would have invented something, made a public company, gone public, made a killing, and been a millionaire, and been on the annual Agoda dinner. But in those days, there were no Agoda dinners, so he was simply trying to make ends meet. So he came up with this theory that there's a tremendous shortage of oil, cooking oil. And he had a system, he built himself this machine, and he had a system, he was going to create oil. Well, how do you make oil? Well, I mean, olive oil was out of the question because there are no olives in Ukraine, right? They don't grow in Ukraine. The weather isn't very friendly towards growing olives in the Ukraine. But he was a very inventive guy. And he decided that he's going to be mechadesh something. He's going to make acorn oil. Why was he going to make acorn oil? It was very simple, because there was a tremendous amount of acorns around. And he just went out into the woods, he collected the acorns, he put them through this machine, and they created this liquid, which he sold, because it was acorn oil. It only had one very slight problem. It never managed to ignite anything, and it never managed to burn. So of course, within a couple of weeks, the people who bought the oil came back and said, you know, you sold us, what is this stuff? Because he had to give the money back and he bankrupted. But he never gave up. So he sat and he thought, and he came up with an idea. He came up with an idea about 80 years before it was actually done and was successful. He was going to make soda. So he built himself a machine, a soda machine, the first soda machine in the world. And he sold it. He bottled it and he sold it. He called it soda. There was only one slight problem. He never managed to get the gas into the soda. So basically everybody bought it, came back and said, you just sold us bottles of oil. We don't need you for bottles of oil. We've got a well out there. We can go and pull up a bucket of water for ourselves. You're telling us you sold us soda. You didn't sell us soda, you sold us water. So he bankrupted. So he never gave up. And he started thinking again. And he came up with this idea. In those days, nobody had a private bathroom in their house. Right? Nobody had a shower in the house. Everybody went to the mikveh, the Beis HaMerachot, an Erev Shabbos. How do you wash? Well, you pour water over yourself and you bang yourself with a load of brushes and that's it. Now, if you had something which you rubbed all over your body and it created some type of foam and it cleansed you, then you'd feel much better. So he gave it a name. He called it soap. And he went out and he built this tremendous vat. This huge barrel, this huge thing. And he had, and this was part of his kishron, this was part of his ability. He just took normal things that you find in the house, right? He didn't even have to buy any particular raw materials. It was just the stuff that was lying around. And he threw it all into the vat, and he threw in water, and he boiled the whole thing up. And it solidified. And he had this huge vat full of solid. And then he took the solid, and he cut it up into little pieces. And he sold it. It's a new invention. It's called soap. If you pour it, rub yourself down with it, and you pour water over it, it'll create suds, and then they'll clean you. He made a killing. Everybody bought this stuff. Of course, there was a slight problem. He never actually created the suds. And then they came back to him after 2 weeks, and they said, you sold us a dumb chicken. I mean, it doesn't do anything. It's just a lump of garnished. So he bankrupted again. And he's sitting there in his house, and he's in the middle of the second production of this soap, and he's got this vat full of this stuff, and it's all coughing away there. And then he suddenly realizes that when he cleaned the vat out from the last time round, the shmatter that he used to clean the vat out, he left in the vat, and now this shmatter was in the middle of this vat, which all of a sudden solidified, and he had this massive vat full of this stuff with a shmata sticking out of it. Alright? No problem. He had one vice in life. He had one tremendous yetzer hara in life. He smoked a pipe. And when he wanted to think, the first thing he did was he filled his pipe with tobacco, and he sat down, pipe in his mouth, lit his pipe, and started thinking. That's when he got these great ideas to invent things, when he was smoking his pipe. So he decided he'll sit down next to the vat and he'll smoke his pipe. So he sat down next to the vat, he took his pipe out, he filled it up with tobacco, he put the pipe into his mouth, and he lit the pipe. But by accident, he dropped the match. And the match floated down alight, and the schmatter in the middle of the vat, which was in the middle of all this stuff, caught fire. Now, how were the houses built in those days? The houses were built from wood. The greatest fear was fire. He saw this thing, he got into a panic. But then he suddenly noticed something. This schmatter was burning beautifully, nice clean flame in the middle of this vat, which is full of this solid stuff, which was meant to be soap. And then he suddenly realized he'd created the perfect candle. And then he had it. I'll become a candle maker. So he started manufacturing candles. That's why they called him Lichtig, because candles produce light, and light in Yiddish is Licht. And he was, when you use it as an adjective, right, the light maker, so he called it Lichtig. So he became known as Pinny Lichtig, Pinny the candle maker. Fine, he had Parnassa. It was very nice. He was married a few years. He had one son. He had one son, Shraga Feivel. Why do you call him Shraga Feivel? What does Shraga mean? It's Aramaic. Light, right? He's a candle maker. So, you know, this poor kid went round through life called, being called Shraga Lichtig. Can you imagine being called candle? You know, I mean, but okay, gave him the name Shraga. Shraga Lichtig. Kid went to cheder in the village which they lived. Finished the cheder at the age of 9. What did he do? He went to work in his father's candle factory. Spent from 9 in the morning, 8 in the morning, till 9, 10 o'clock at night, boiling up these vats of what was formerly soap and now had become candle wax. The kid reached the age of 18, he reached the age of 19, he was going off his mind. Do you know what it's like getting up every single morning and doing the same thing? You take the same rubbish, put it into the vat, boil up the vat, wait till it's digged, take it out, chop it up into pieces, make sure that you put in the schmatters in the right place that should be the wicks. The kid's going off his mind. He's been doing this for 2 years, 2.5 years. He's going, take Meshuggah, he can't take it anymore. Turns around to his father and he says to his father, I've had it. This is it. I'm not spending the rest of my life being a candle maker in a village somewhere in the border between Ukraine and Russia. So his father says to him, okay, great. So what are you going to be, a professor of engineering? I mean, you went to cheder till basically third grade. You can daven in a siddur. You're a frum guy. But you haven't got a profession. I mean, what are you going to do? So he was a normal teenager. He said, I'm going to get in touch with nature. So his father said, no, none of that. None of that. None of that. We're a frum house here. None of that. None of that. He said, no. I don't want to do this. I want to do something where I'm in touch with the world, where I've got freedom, where I've got space, where I'm not sitting my whole life making candles. So his father said to him, you know what? Gesundheit. You think you can make it on your own? Okay, fine. Here. Take a couple of hundred ruble or whatever it was. B'chaim u'shalom. When you make your first million, send me a pigeon. Right? There were no telegrams in those days. The kid goes off. Right? Kid goes off. There's no trains. But how do you travel in those days? Horse and car. He starts traveling, he travels. I don't want to bore you with his story too long, but he keeps traveling. He actually travels for about 5 months. And he ends up in a village, it's irrelevant, the name of the village, but I checked it out, it appears, you can Google it. There's a group of Goyim who live in Pittsburgh who came from the same village and they have a website. They, in fact, on the website they have a map. The map shows you where the Jews lived in the village. It's very interesting. He ended up in a village in, which is somewhere near Kabulsk, something like that. In a village somewhere near the Black Sea. It's somewhere near the Black Sea. He ends up in this village. And this village is on the sea. And there's a Jewish community there, like all the villages. What were the villages like in those days? There was 100 goyim and there were 100 yidden. That's what it was. The Jews lived in one street, the goyim lived in the other street. Right? As long as you kept away on Motzei Shabbos when the goyim got drunk, they lived peacefully. He ends up in this village, and he thinks to himself, what can he do in this village? Now, he inherited from his father one thing. He was very good with his hands. That was number one. And number two, he had ideas. So he said, you know, I'm not going to sit in a room and do something like my father did his entire life. No way. I'm going to be in touch with nature. I'm going to be in touch with God. I'm going to be free. So he thinks to himself, what can he do? Anyways, when you're looking for a profession in those days and you're trying to think what to do, what do? You go down to the marketplace. Where's the marketplace? The marketplace is not in the village. The village doesn't have a marketplace. But about 20 kilometers from the village, there's a town. The town has a marketplace. He'll go down to the marketplace and he'll see what people are doing. What are they dealing with? What's the local businesses? Comes down to the marketplace. What does he find in the marketplace? Who's selling stuff in the marketplace? There's two types of people. There's goyim, who are selling stuff, and the Jews who are selling stuff. The Jews are selling stuff which is easy to get hold of, right? The Jews are peddlers. They bought here, they sell it here. A couple of rusty nails, a couple of this, a couple of that. Bought it for a kopeck, sell it to a goy for 5 ruble. Right? That was what the Jews were doing. He's looking around, and the goyim, he notices something. He sees a guy, he's selling fish. Guy's a fishmonger, he's selling fish. Go away, a Russian peasant selling fish. He goes over to the goy and he says to him, where do you get your fish from? So the guy looks at him and says, we didn't where I get my fish from, we're on the sea here. He says, there's a fisherman who goes out and he fishes. And he brings in fish. He sells me the fish and I sell the fish weiter. So he says, well, who's the fisherman? So the guy says, who's the fisherman? Boris is the fisherman. Where do you find Boris? The fishmonger looked at him and he says, you stupid. He says, I don't think so. Why? He says, what does a fisherman do all day? He fishes. Where do you fish? Out at sea. Well, how do you fish out at sea? You're on a boat. So what is a fisherman by definition? It's a sailor. Okay, so where do you find a sailor when he's on land? In a bar. He says, right. You want to know where Boris is? He's in the local bar. Fine. Goes off to the local bar. He walks into the local bar. And he says, anybody know where Boris is? And they all look at him and they say, sure, on the floor. He has a look, there's a Russian guy lying on the floor there, he's drunk out of his mind, he doesn't know where he is. As he pours a couple of buckets of water over the guy lying on the floor, the guy on the floor starts to move, he wakes him up, he says, you Boris? The guy says, yeah, I'm Boris. He says, fine. You fisherman? He says, yeah. He says, I want you to teach me how to fish. So the guy looks at him and he says, what? He says, I want you to teach me how to fish. He says, well, I've got 3 problems. So he says, what are your problems? So the guy says to him, problem number one, since the world was created, there has not been a Jewish fisherman. There is no such thing as a Jewish fisherman. Jews don't fish. He says, that's number one. Number two, you can't fish unless you have a boat. You haven't got a boat. And number three, I don't need anybody to help me, so why should I teach you how to fish? So he says to him, okay, I'm going to be the first Jewish fisherman. That's number one. Number two, I will build myself a boat. And number three, you do need someone to help you. So Boris says, I don't need somebody to help me. He says to him, you do need somebody to help me. Boris says, I don't need somebody to help me. He says, you do. Boris says, no. Meanwhile, he's put his hand in his pocket. He takes out a 100-ruble note and he gives it to Boris. And he says, you do need somebody to help you. And Boris says, I do need somebody to help me. Tomorrow morning, 3:30, come down to the dock, get on my boat. Bekitza, he gets on the boat, the Kahava. Day in, day out, he goes out on the boat with Boris. Meanwhile, in the village, right, back in the village, in his backyard, he starts building a boat. And he's good with his hands, and money he's got, because his father gave him a couple of 100 ruble before he left. He only gave 100 ruble to Boris. And he buys the wood, and he starts building a boat, and he builds himself the most beautiful boat you can imagine, because he's very good with his hands. But he doesn't use the boat, because he's going out with Boris, and Boris is teaching him all the tricks of the trade, teaching him how to be a fisherman. 6 months, the guy did shimush by Boris. And he became a proficient fisherman. At which point, he schlepped his boat down to the sea, and he said to Boris, "Boris, you got competition. I'm opening up my own business. There's going to be Boris fish, and there's going to be Schrager Richtig fish. And you'll see, I'll have you out of business before you know what's hit you." He starts going out, and he starts fishing. Now, the truth of the matter is that it was a good business. The problem is that you have to work like a dog. Because the fish come out around about 3:30 in the morning. And they're there for a couple of hours. Then they go, they're like Leivaria Bochrim. Then they go to bed for a few hours, right? Then they come back for half an hour. Then they go back. And then you've got to go and search them. You've got to go and find them. And it was a long day's work. So he used to be up every morning, 3 o'clock. 3:30 he was out there, right? He used to pop back. 9:30 in the morning, run, go to Shul to Daven, then go back out again, working like a dog. But he made a parnosa. And he was Shragalichtig, the businessman. So, of course, what happens is that one day somebody comes along and says, "Young man, I have a shidduch for you." And they suggest a shidduch for him. Who's the shidduch? The girl from the village. She's an orphan. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows where he came from, right? He's not the big miyuchas. He's not the big yassin. Nobody knows who his parents are, who, what, and when. He's a guy who turned up one day and ended up being a fisherman. And besides that, who wants to marry a Jewish fisherman? Who's ever heard of a Jewish fisherman? He marries her. He marries her, and the Eibishter helps, and within 5 years, they got 7 kids. Okay? He's got to support a wife and 7 kids. He works like a dog. He works from 3 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night. This guy is working. He manages to sleep 3 hours a night, and that's it. He's dog tired the whole time. What happens? He goes out fishing. Very often, he falls asleep. Okay? So he falls asleep. You're on a boat, and you fall asleep. What's the problem? You sleep for an hour, you sleep for 2 hours. As long as the current isn't too strong, which it wasn't, because he wasn't so far offshore, you've got no problem. The boat floats around a bit. He used to wake up after half an hour finds he's a little bit off track. Right? So he steered the boat back to where he had to go to. And even if he slept for 2 hours, nothing happens. It comes before Pesach. It's just before Pesach, and the Goyisha Chagah, the Goyisha festival, is the same time, and he knows that he's going to be able to sell a huge amount of fish. So he says to his wife, "Look," he says, "I'm going to have to put together a huge amount of fish, but what we're going to earn from this amount of fish is going to keep us going for a good few weeks. I'm taking with me my talis and tefillin. I'm taking with me food for a few days. And I'm going to be out there for 2 or 3 days. And then I'll bring the entire catch back. And then I promise you I'll be home. I'll help you for Pesach. We'll make enough money for a few weeks." She says to him, "What are you going to take? I mean, there were no refrigerators in those days. What are you going to take which is not going to go bad?" He says, "No problem. Well, Schmaltz herring won't go bad, right? It's marinated. It's in salt. It won't go bad. And he's got pickles. And he's got this. And he's got a couple of jars of jam. And he's got these things. And he takes and he packs it all up. And he goes out on the boat. And he works like a dog on the boat. And he davens on the boat. And it comes 11 o'clock at night, and he falls asleep, and he falls into a deep sleep. His muzzle, a storm breaks out. A storm breaks out. He's fast asleep. He doesn't hear a thing. He wakes up about 4 hours later. He looks around, he realizes he's been asleep, and he says, "Oh, I've got to get back to my usual patch." He looks around, he's got no idea where he is. He's miles away from where he usually is. He says, "Oh, that's the problem." Now, there was no GPS in those days, and there's no radar, and there's no one, and he can't lean out the window and ask anybody, "Tell me, how do I get back?" And he's sailing in the middle of the Black Sea, and he's got no idea where he is. Day goes by. 2 days go by. 3 days go by. And he's running out of food. He's running out of food and he's running out of water. And he's sailing and he's got no idea where he is. absolutely no idea where he is. Comes the third day, he starts davening through Ribbono Shel Olam. He lists all his chatoim. He says, I'm doing tshuva and everything I ever did. Ribbono Shel Olam, get me somewhere. I'm going to die out here in the sea. Nobody's going to know where I am. I'm not going to be buried. There's going to be no zeich of me. Nobody's going to know. My wife's going to remain in Aguna all her life. My kids are not going to know what happened to their father. She'll think I ran away from her. Do something. A couple of hours later, but he's convinced already that there's no hope, he sees in the distance, it looks like land. But he sees it very funny. It looks like land, but it's totally dark. And it looks as if like a candle's there. He looks as if like he sees flickering lights like candles. So he thinks to himself, you know what? This is probably civilization. So he starts rowing like crazy towards the land. And he gets like, I don't know, a quarter of an hour away from land, and he suddenly stops and he says, wait, 1 minute. I don't even know where I am. I mean, these guys could be cannibals. I mean, they could be human eaters. They could chop me up and use me as lakshan or something. I mean, I don't even know where I'm going. Why am I going like crazy towards this place? I got no idea who these people are, what the natives are like. I mean, some guy can come out with a bone through his nose and speak to me in some language I don't understand. And before I know what it is, I've offered to be the day's kampot. I don't know what's going on here. So then he says to himself, I'm going to stay here. I'm definitely going to die, so I might as well take the risk of going there. He says, at least I'll be useful to somebody there. I'll be his kampot. If I die out here, I'm not going to be used to anybody. See, he rows to the land. He gets out the boat. He schleps the boat up onto the land. And he says, very interesting. It's already 7 o'clock in the morning. It's pitch dark. The place is like it's in the middle of the night. And he says, you know, I once heard about this. He says, I heard there's a place, there's a country, not far from Russia, where certain times of the year is dark the whole time, where there's no light. He says, that's where I must have ended up, right? It's what we today call Finland, but he didn't realize that. He says, I must be in this place. The Jews used to call it the Orei HaChoshech, the cities of darkness, right? They knew there was such a place. In fact, there's a tshuva from Yisrochonim where he talks about when you daven, Shachris, in the Orei HaChoshech, right? In those places where it's dark the whole time, where it never becomes light. All of a sudden, a guy says to him, Shalom Aleichem. He says, what? The guy says to him, Shalom Aleichem. He looks at him. There's a Jew standing there. On the beach where he's schlepping his boat up, there's a Jew standing there. The Jew looks at him and says, what's your name? He says, Shraga Lichtig. He says, oh, you've got a right name for this place. He says, we're in the darkness the whole time. Shraga Lichtig. I mean, you've got the right name for here. Candle, right? So he says to the guy, where am I? He says, where are you? He says, you're in the Orei HaChoshech. So the guy says to him, how do I get back? So the Jew says to him, look, if you want to go back, he says, I've got no problem. I'll get a couple of Jews and they'll take you on a boat and they'll take you back. But why do you want to go back? So the guy says, what do you mean why I want to go back? I've got a wife and 7 kids over there. So he says, yeah, I know that. He says, but how did you get here, Bichlal? So he tells him the story. He's a fisherman, blah, 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 Boris, the guy's a miser. So the guy says to him, you've got problems with Parnassa, right? He says, yeah. He says, you know, here, it's much easier Parnassa-wise. What do you want to go back for? Stay here for 6 months. You'll make enough money here for 6 months. You go back, you won't have to work anymore. So it's true, your wife and your kids will be on their own for 6 months, but you'll make enough money here that they'll be happier ever after. You won't need anything. So he says, you know what? That's not a bad idea. So the guy says, come, I'll take you to the local village. He takes him up. And he takes him to the local village. And as he goes up to the local village, he notices something. It's something very strange. It's dark. So how have they got light there? How do they have light there? They've got very, very few candles. They've got, in odd places, they've got candles. But he sees that the place is littered with diamonds. The place is littered with diamonds. They're like rolling around in the streets. Diamonds. Real diamonds. And what these people were doing was they were taking this little candle and they were putting the diamonds next to the candle. When you put the diamonds next to the candles, the reflection of the candle in the diamonds, it sends out the light in all directions. That was the way that they were living. He sees his diamonds, he goes, Mashuk, he says, diamonds rolling around. He says, what are these? The guy says, well, that's what the earth's like here. He says, we use it, it helps us to give us light. He says, really? Takes a handful, puts it in his pocket. Right, okay. Then he says to the guy, why are there so few candles here? So the guy says, why are there so few candles? He says, how do you make candles? You've got to take the sap of a certain type of tree, blah, 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 blah. There's one guy who knows how to do it. But the problem is that we haven't got enough of these trees. So he says to the guy, tell me, he says, candles is a good business here? He says, candles is a good business here? He says, the guy says to him, wax! Wax! That's the most precious commodity that we have. We can't see a thing without the candles. He says, well, really? He says, and you only know how to make candles from a certain type of sap, from a certain type of tree? And the guy says, yeah. He says, okay, I've got a business. And the guy says to him, what? He says, my name's not Shagalichtig for nothing. I am a candle maker. I don't need no trees. He gets to the village, they give him a room, he builds himself a vat, he takes all the stuff that he did 2 years by his father, and he starts making candles. And he's making candles, and he's selling candles, and he becomes a multimillionaire. Because he's the only guy in the place who knows how to make candles. And wax is the ultimate. And the people begging him, they come to his door, they're willing to pay him anything he wants, give us a piece of wax. He spends 4 years in this place. He spends 4 years, he makes Bill Gates look like a pauper. He is a multi-millionaire. And after 4 years, day in, day out, he's dealing with wax and he's selling wax and people banging at his doors. In fact, there was once a riot. They had to call out the police because people wanted a small piece of wax. They were willing to pay him fortunes of money for it. He says, enough. Enough! He turns around to the person he was befriended him, who was the head of the community there. He says, I've been here 4 years. I want to go home. The guy says, listen, Bakashay, you want to go home? Go home. I'll give you a boat. I'll give you people. They'll take you back home. Wants to go home. He's got all this currency. And all this currency is worthless outside of where he is, because this is Ariya Choshek currency. And there's no money changers that are going to change it for him into the currency and thing. So what does he have to do? He has to convert it into what is the most valuable. What's the most valuable? Wax! He takes every single cent that he's got, and he invests it in raw material, and he creates wax. And he's got boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of matte wax. And the day comes when he has to leave, and they make him a big sort of spreader, and everybody's giving drushes and how thankful they are that he was here, and blah, 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 blah. And they load him up on the boat with all this wax, and he's got wax and wax and wax and wax and wax, and off he sails. And they take him back. And it's already summer and it's hot. And he does notice a strange smell coming from the boxes, but he ignores it. And eventually he gets back home. Can you imagine the scene when this guy walks into his house? He hasn't been there for years. All of a sudden he walks in, his wife's there, his kids are there, and they see him and they scream, Dad! He's back! And his wife says, where have you been? And he says, don't worry, we are multimillionaires. And she says, multimillionaires? From what? He says, let me open you up the boxes. And she says, those boxes stink. And he opens up the boxes and the smell is absolutely unbelievable. And there's this liquid in there which is disgusting. And she says, are you mad? And he says, it's wax! Wax is the most valuable thing in the world! And she says, you've really gone off your mind. You've been in a Mishagoyim house for the last 7 years, you've been smoking something. What's wrong with you? Wax, wax, I can go around the corner, I can buy as much as I want. He says, you know what, you're right. But where I was living for the last 7 years, wax was the most valuable thing that existed. She said, I don't care where you were living. Reality is here. He says, I don't know, I'm confused. She says, anyway, you're standing there with his clothing, you've been sailing with them for 5 days, they stink as well, get them off. So he takes off his pants, she says, I'll wash them. She picks up the pants, she says, what have you got in the pocket? He says, I don't know, I've got anything in the pocket. She says, take out the stuff from the pocket before I wash the pants. He puts it in his pocket, what does he take out? He takes out a whole bunch of diamonds that he had, which he picked up on the first day that he was in that place when he saw these diamonds. She says, we're rich! He says, you know what? You're right. He says, the diamonds are worth something. That's the story of Shraga Lichtig. That's the story of every single guy sitting in this room. We come down into this world. This world is Yerei HaChoshech. We're only here for a very limited period of time. 70 shana, 70 years maybe. In Bigvurus, 80 shana, maybe 80 years. And if we're very, very lucky, maybe a little bit more than 80 years. What's 80 years? It's nothing. Let me tell you something, guys. Yesterday I was your age. In my mind, it was yesterday. The fact that it was 40 years ago is meaningless. It was yesterday. It was yesterday. Because that's the way life is. Before you turn round, it's gone. We're here for 80 years, 70 years. The Ribbono Shel Olam sends the neshama down to this world. Up there, before we came down, there was a certain scale of values. There were things that were worthless, and there were things that were diamonds. The neshama knew up there, what's a diamond? A diamond is sitting and learning a black gemara, a diamond is being mekayem a mitzvah, a diamond is tefillah b'tzibur. A diamond is everything that a Jew has to do. Then we come down into this world, and what do? We come into a world which is Orei HaChoshech. In this world, the scale of values are totally different. In this world, we suddenly think that there are things which are more valuable than diamonds. In this world, we're all assuming that the wax is the most important thing in the world. You can be sitting in a Beis Medrash, or you can be sitting in a bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Erev Yom Kippur. Right? One or the other. You can be doing one, or you can be doing the other. And you switch the diamond for the wax. Fine, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. Collect your boxes of marks. Collect them. One box after another box after another box after another box. Load them up on your boat. At the end of 80 years, the end of 85 years, you're going to sail back home. And you're going to get up there. All of us, we're going to go up there. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say, no. And we're going to say, we're rich! And he's going to say, with what? And we're going to say, no problem. 12.5 months solid in Israel in Ben Yehuda, of which 6 months solid in a bar, of which 3 months together with two girls who, through me, got thrown out of them. And this, and that, and this, and that, and this, and that. We're going to give them a whole list. There's going to be a whole list of why we're wealthy. And the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say, are you crazy? Are you crazy? That stinks! And then we're going to say, 1 minute. 1 minute. Yeah, I did learn when I was 18, because Rabbi Strizow twisted my arm, 1 hour. One Seder. I learned 1 hour. And then Malachim are going to say all of a sudden, he's rich! Think about it.